Hello, everyone. Today's special guest is Herlaine Mohammed. She is a cybersecurity specialist, chief executive officer at SciTech Solutions, and she's an Army veteran, a speaker, and mentor as well. We're so thrilled to have her on today, and I can't wait to dive in and get to know you. How are you doing, Herlaine? How's your day been going?
Thank you. It's been going great. Thank you for the intro.
Of course, of course. I really want to just know a little bit about your background. I don't know if we should just jump into SciTech, but I guess like you're a CEO, and I love having founders and CEOs on the podcast. And I just want to know for our listeners, what is SciTech Solutions?
SciTech Solutions is my company. So I founded it earlier this year. So it's still our first year. It's fresh, but we are a cyber consulting agency. So we work mainly on government contracts, looking to get into bidding on government contracts in the future, and then also work with a couple of the private sector organizations that we provide services for.
I think the government space in cybersecurity or even consulting is so hard to get into.
Yes.
And right, because it's like I always hear, okay, you need these certifications. You have to have these like a clearance as well. If the listeners didn't know about your background, because I can see it and I know that you've kind of came from somewhat government background. So you're not new to this space. You're very excelled and I think experienced. Based on SciTech and before that, what were you doing and how did you get started in cybersecurity?
I got started. Well, I actually did an internship when I was 15. I was kind of really young, but through the Texas, they have a workforce development program for youth. I think it was from ages 14 to 24. So when I was 15, I did like a summer youth program with them where I was an IT intern. And then when I turned 17, I reenlisted, I enlisted, I'm sorry, into the Army. So that's when I was an IT specialist, which is a 25 Bravo. And that was the jump start of my IT career. It wasn't originally planning to go that way because I was going to do medical school, but it kind of panned out where I ended up sticking with IT.
That's funny that you were supposed to do medical school because I was supposed to do nursing school and I was like,
Oh,
not for me.
that.
Right.
I tried to do nursing too for like a year. I was like, no, I did pre-med for 3 years and then I ended up switching. But my mom was kind of forcing me into that lane because all of my siblings are all
Right.
doctors, just kind of the thing to do in our family. And she was a nurse also. So
Oh.
I was kind of the black sheep.
Yeah. What made you want to get into the army?
My mom was in the army, so she did 26 years, I'm going to say, for nursing. She was a nursing director in the military and a captain. And just seeing how it changed her life, she was a single mom, so all the benefits that she had with it, just seemed like a great quality of life that it could provide. As far as education benefits, the housing, the VA, I was like, you can't really beat that.
That's so sweet that she was doing that for so long and you kind of looked up to her. So it's kind of weird though. Like, if everybody in your family is a doctor and your mom had that background, how did you fall into tech?
So when I did the IT intern and then I was going to do my ASVAB to join the military, I originally went so I could be a 68 Whiskey, which is a combat medic. And when I was trying to join, the recruiter was just like, hey, you scored really high on the ASVAB, which is the aptitude test they see which job you'll qualify for, essentially. And he was just like, you can do anything like intelligence, IT, like you have the score that you need for that. So why don't you go that route? It's a lot of jobs when you get out. Because I think he could kind of tell that I wasn't really feeling the medic. I wasn't really feeling it, but he was great and he just gave me a lot of mentorship and was explaining how I can get into contracting and things like that. I was young at the time, so I didn't really understand too much of how it worked, but I'm glad I went with it. It was really his
Yeah.
guidance getting into it.
That's sweet. How did you land that internship at 15?
So that was the Texas Veterans Commission that I was doing the internship with, and it was through, they have a workforce development program. Usually every individual city should have their own workforce development. So I signed up for that and they gave a summer internship that I was able to apply to. So they take anybody from ages 14 to 24. So that's a great way to get into the tech. They also pay for your certifications if you're young and you're trying to develop your career, you can get free certifications through them. So I did that as well.
Wow, yeah, you did say that. You started really young.
Yeah, I
So
did. I
you've kind of seen it evolve, especially like at a young age. And then you joined the army and you were still doing tech related things. You were in the army for 4 years. How was your experience with the two different roles that you had there as a network admin and as a senior information security specialist? How was your experience?
Oh, it was amazing. So, like off the rip, when they sent us to AIT, which is the training where we go and learn about our job, they introduced us to so many different things. So, IT specialist is pretty vague. It's just information technology specialist. So, you touch anything from like networks to servers to radios, cybersecurity. We were also doing satellites, so we did a little bit of SATCOM also. It was pretty much a jack of all trades in tech. So I got really good exposure at a young age. They also helped prepare us to take the A plus, Net plus, and Sec plus. So that was really helpful. It was an amazing experience. Like I can't stress it enough that I feel like people should join the military if they want to get into tech. I think that you can't beat having those years of experience, especially at a young age, on top of them being able to pay for your schooling. That was really helpful too because I was able to use the tuition assistance while I was enrolled, while I was in the military. So I used my tuition assistance yearly. And then in Texas, they also have this thing called the Hazelwood Act, which is it basically makes you exempt from paying tuition at any Texas public school. So I
Oh.
was able to use the Hazelwood Act on top of that. So I was just basically pocketing the money I was getting from like the tuition assistance and GI Bill since I was exempt from paying bills and then also
Wow.
exempt from paying tuition. And then also they gave me a stipend for my housing as well.
Wow, that's really smart.
It was really
That
helpful.
that's such a life hack to have.
It is. Most people don't know about it.
Yeah, that's I've never heard of that. So you're from Texas.
Yes, a little bit. So my mom was military. We were all over. But I
Okay,
spent
yeah.
my like majority of my older years in Texas. I was actually born in Los Angeles and then I grew up in Boston when I was younger, but we left around when I was 12. So we lived all over
Wow.
ever since then.
Yeah, that's cool. And where are you at now? You're in DC?
Yes, I am. I'm in Washington, D.C. now.
Nice. Okay, I'm in Indianapolis, not too far from you.
Oh, nice. I used to
Well,
live in Brownsburg also.
in Brownsburg.
Yeah, in Indiana.
What?
That was another place that I lived too.
Oh my God, that's so random.
It
When
is.
did you live here?
I was in the sixth grade, so I don't even know what year that was. 2004 or five. I'm bad with math. It
Wow.
was way back in the like almost
Yeah.
well, over 15 years possibly.
Wow. That's funny. Okay, that's cool.
I
It's changed
swear.
probably since you've been here.
Yeah, they have a great tech team though, from what I'm hearing.
Yeah, there's a lot of startups that are advancing from here. Like if you've heard of ServiceNow, like that's from here. I don't know some other ones. It's crazy because I used to be so involved in college with the network scene and like what's going on. And now it's just life has gotten so busy that I don't even know what goes on anymore here.
Yeah, it's hard to be intentional to make time for that when you have so much going on, especially you have your
It
podcast too. So I'm sure your
Yeah.
time outside of work is just backed up.
So you're in DC. You're gonna speak at Thanksgiving, right?
I'm excited about that. We're also hosting a
Yay.
workshop. So my company, SciTech, is one of the sponsors. So we're a silver tier. We're going to have an expo booth there. And then I'm also going to be part of the small business marketplace because I have a hair care line. So we're going to be debuting our hair care products at the small business. So they're just highlighting like local DMV area businesses. So we're going to have Airorganics products there. And then also SciTech, we're doing a cybersecurity workshop, which I'm really excited about.
Wow, so many things. You have a hair care product. Oh my
Me
God, I love that. DC, I feel like
too.
I've been to DC a few times. I have a cousin that lives there and I loved it there. Like the energy, the amount of people that just collaborate, and there's so many different cultures. Talk to me about your hair care product.
So that has been in the making for the past like year. I've been
Yeah.
working on formulations. I've always been a DIYer. I would just make different hair care products on my own at home and also skincare products that I would try out different DIY projects. And then I found things that would work to kind of help grow my hair. I was using like a Ayurvedic remedies that I would put into the hair care items. And then from there, people just kind of picked it up and they would always ask me to make them some. They were just
Wow.
like, hey, can you make me some? Make me some. So whenever I had like herbal oils or different hair butters and creams, I would just go and like give it to them. I'd make big, like larger batches. And then I got started posting it on TikTok and that kind of blew up and people wanted to purchase it. So from there, I went to try to create stable formulations. I worked with cosmetic formulas for this past year just to have everything lined up instead of it's not just, you know, home-based product that I'm giving to them that isn't stable. But I'm excited to debut it. Right now we're just only selling on TikTok shop, but we're gonna have our website up soon.
So cool that you're you've it sounds like The last year or two has been really busy for you. Just to backtrack, Herlaine, you've had a few different experiences after the army, like the Geek Squad. You worked at a hospital system, CHI. You were at Insight Global. And then it looks like you were at the Air Force. So cool. And then you did the Department of Homeland. And then you also were at the Pentagon with the U.S. Department of Defense. A lot of amazing experience. So I'm excited to just hear about your overall experience. Like, I know that not everyone knows that how hard the roles are, but I know they're difficult. So I applaud you for that. And I just want to learn, you know, for our listeners, how did you have all these under your belt, right? How did you excel and use all these tools to your advantage after the Army?
So after the Army, definitely worked my way from the ground up, you know? So I went in when I was young, obviously I enlisted at 17. And then when I got out, I was still in my early 20s. So I was like, okay, I'm going to go back to school and get a degree, focus on that. And then I was looking for work while I was going to be enrolled in school. And I didn't really know what I could do. They didn't give good like career transition support when I was getting out. I didn't understand or know how SkillBridge worked. So I didn't know what roles I would be a good fit for when it came to tech. So my instant thought was what I knew in high school, which was like Geek Squad, Micro Center, those type of positions that were still service roles that I could interact with customers. So I went and applied at Geek Squad and became manager there. And that was my first official role outside of the military on the civilian side. Did that for about a year, and then someone had saw my resume and they were just like, oh my God, you shouldn't be working here. They're like, you have so much experience, you have all these certifications, we can bring you on at the hospital that I'm working at. So I applied, and then that's when I came on at the hospital. So that's I did that for 3 years while I was still finishing school. And at the hospital, I initially came in for a help desk. I was a help desk role. I did that for about 6 months. That was a contract to hire role. And then once I got hired on is when I transitioned to do like their vulnerability management and systems administration.
When you said you were doing school, did we talk about school yet? What'd you go to school for?
So I went to University of Houston. I was doing biology pre-med for undergrad. And then I had a minor in chemistry.
Wow. So you didn't even go to school for tech?
No. So I am now. I did afterwards. But I wasted about a good 4 years in school of not doing anything tech related. And then my GI Bill money was
just waste it. I don't think it was a waste. You still learned.
Not necessarily wasted.
The medical life.
I feel like all those credits I got, I feel like I should just go back and get a biology degree just to get it, because I probably only have like 5 classes to take to get it.
Well, but, I guess, you know, you have your own hair product. I think that could be.
It does help from that. It does help from that sense, I will say, because I can understand formulations a lot easier.
Right.
So like the cosmetic side of things. So that's been helpful for sure. But I did about 3 years of biology pre-med, and then I switched to nursing for a year. And after that was when I was like, all right, I'm done with school. Let me just take a break before deciding to go back to do cybersecurity and computer science. I am finishing my master's now with WGU, Western Governors University. They have a master's in cybersecurity information assurance, which is really helpful that it's online and it's self-paced. So I've really enjoyed that too.
I love that. I've heard good things about WGU. So that's good.
They're a great school. They're very military friendly. And especially for people who like have a real life, if you work full time, it can be a little bit difficult to still go to classes in person. So I like the online model that they have.
I can't even imagine doing school on top of a full-time.
It's a struggle. Oh, it's a struggle. It's not the easy. Sometimes I'm just not devoted to it. Like,
well, not even a full-time. You're a whole CEO.
Yeah.
Which I know is full-time, but it's like full-time plus a full-time.
Yeah. The good thing about WGU though, they let you take 3 months breaks. So in between the 6 month semesters. So if you need to take a break at any time, you take that for 3 months and then come back in.
Okay. That's nice. That's nice. I'll think about it later if I ever want to pursue my master's.
It's worth it. It helps prepare you also for a CISSP. Their program, the master's program. You get a lot of good certifications with it too.
That's cool. What do you think about certifications? What's your opinion on it? Like with security?
I have multiple different mixed opinions. It depends, because there are some certifications that are just like a cash grab, you know, money mill, where they're trying to get you to pay to recertify every so often, or you have to be a membership of them. You have to pay yearly membership fees. I think the knowledge is beneficial for all certifications. If you're studying towards something and you get the knowledge that you can apply from it to real world, you can't beat that ever. Some of them though, I just don't like the model that they have. They also have a couple of certification vendors that have contracts with like the military and government. So they have requirements where it comes to, you have to have compliance levels. It's called DoD 8570. Well, it was back in the day, but it's 8410 now. So you have to meet the compliance levels with that. So if you're going to work in like a government military sense, it makes sense to get the certifications. If you're going to be in the private sector, it makes more sense to focus on like real hard skills. And then the certifications that are HR amplifiers. So you can say the ones that HR likes to see, even though they might not be the best industry wise or for your overall career, it'll just help get your foot in the door.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's true. I see them more as a requirement too, with the government contracts and what you're doing. Mm-hmm. And then it is like a foot in the door. I think, you know, something that we always talk about in the industry is going to school or getting the certifications. And I think just enabling that certification to your portfolio will also add a foot in the door if you don't have a degree versus if you have a degree. Yeah,
absolutely. I am very pro degree though. More,
yeah, yeah.
More so than education. I feel like you can never be an institute and a degree coming from a university or college and compare the two. It's not really comparable.
Yeah, it's a whole experience. I think I always tell people like it's just I genuinely miss school sometimes.
No, same. I feel like life was easier then.
I know. We didn't have any responsibilities. We didn't think about bills. Well, I still had bills, but.
One thing I do wish though I would have took more advantage of is like internships while I was in school.
Oh, yeah.
I never really did that because I was already working, but I was like, I could have already been doing an internship like that applies to the career that I want to get into, the career track, instead of doing like desktop support or help desk or vulnerability management.
Yeah, I had 3 internships, but it was required with my degree. Oh.
Man.
Yeah, so
it should be more like that.
Yeah, I know. I worked like 3 jobs and I was doing internships.
You do a lot too. Yeah.
Yeah, it was a hectic time. Like college was insane to me. So we'll go back to, so you did that at CHI and then you were at Insight Global as a cybersecurity engineer. How was that before your transition to the Air Force?
It was great. So, well, Insight Global is actually just a staffing company. So they'll place you with different like agencies or corporations that they have to staff. So I was working with Shell Corporation. It was on a trade floor that they have out based in Houston. So I did that for about a year and then decided I hated Houston. I was like, I need to leave and get back into the government side of things because I realized I applied for a role and found out that my clearance had lapsed. Essentially, if you're not using a clearance for up to 24 months, 2 years, then it expires and lapses. You're no longer able to use it or be in a cleared role. You have to do reinvestigation for it. So that was how I transitioned going into the Air Force. They had a role that they were willing to sponsor me for and upgrade my clearance. Because in the Army, I had a secret. They were willing to give me the top secret SDI. So they were going to move me out. So I went and relocated to New Mexico, Cannon Air Force Base. And I was contracting with them out there.
Wow. How was the Air Force with New Mexico? Did you like New Mexico more?
Not necessarily. So I met a lot of really great people. But if you know, Cannon Air Force Base is like one of the most hated bases in the Air Force because it's in the middle of nowhere. Oh. It's like 3 hours, I think, to Lubbock was the closest city that we would usually go
Lubbock.
To.
Oh, Lubbock. Yeah.
Yeah. So it's in the middle of the nowhere. But I met a lot of really great people. And then a lot of the projects that I worked on and what my role was, I really enjoyed that. Like, you can't beat that. I got experience. Like, that was my first actual leadership experience where I got to be a director. And then I was also sponsored for the clearance. So you can't beat that also. It requires, if you're getting sponsored for a clearance, it's going to require typically they're having to go to remote locations where they're willing to sponsor it, or being in an area like the DMV where they have sponsorships that they can give to you just because of the abundance of government contractors here. Some people also go overseas. So I was going to do overseas contracting too at one point, but then it just made more sense to come here to the DMV. But that's another way to get sponsorships outside the military.
Okay. So I was going to ask that, have you heard of people getting a clearance sponsorship outside the military with no military background?
Oh, absolutely. It happens all the time. So when I was actually at Kennedy Air Force Base, I was the supervisor and site director there. So I was doing the hiring for the candidates that we had. And I was able to bring in a couple of people that they didn't really have any background in IT or experience for help desk and not help desk, I'm sorry, desktop support, PC tech roles. So they came in, no military background, no experience whatsoever, and were sponsored for a TS/SCI clearance on the spot. And they were able to get the experience while they were there.
That's crazy. I knew that happened to one of my classmates after college. He got signed with the DoD, got a contract, got a clearance, and just started making six figures. And I was like, how do I do that? And I was like, how are people getting this? That's so cool.
The language to try to find them is what's more difficult than anything. Like you have to be able to search like ability to obtain or eligible. They'll say eligible, so they don't require you to actually have it. They'll be willing to sponsor you. But LinkedIn is a really great tool for that. You can always see sponsorships on there, and then also clearance jobs.
Okay, neat. Those are good resources for anyone that really wants to get into that, because I just want to know, is the money really there?
It's definitely there. I mean, for entry-level people, I've seen people who don't really have experience. I can give you one I know off the rip. So he came out, I hired him when I was at Kennan Air Force Base. He was making about 45K. They're doing PC tech support, which is just desktop support. He was doing that for a year. He got his clearance and then was able to go overseas. So he got a position in Qatar. It was making like 267 total. And this is his second official year. It was a cybersecurity position also. So they were willing to teach him, and he was going out there and was able to like quadruple his income
That's
just for
amazing.
having that clearance, and also being in a cyber role out there. Overseas government contracting overseas for sure is very lucrative. You also work a lot more hours, so that's why it becomes a lot more that you're making over there, because you might have 12-hour days, whereas here we have our 8-hour days. So you're getting that overtime pay, but they get a lot of other really great benefits. But then also just staying in the States, it's still you can make six figures coming in as an entry-level person. Once you're at the towards the end of your career, it depends on what lane you kind of want to go in. So it can kind of tap out around like 250 up to 250. I've seen maybe max 300, but really niche down into the roles. But for cybersecurity, most of the people I see tap out a little bit over 200 if they're not going to be doing, some people do multiple roles, so they'll work like one swing shift job in the evening and then one in the morning, and be able to maximize all of that and make like 400 to 500 off of both of those roles together. Then you can also start a government contracting company or agency where you have people that work under you and they're all within those roles. So you get some sort of overhead and money for each of those seats that you have, as well as you're working in a technical role. So you're making your own salary. There's a lot of different ways you can go about it. And then also you can always go on. And management makes great money also. Seeing some people who be like PMs, cyber PMs make great money. You can't beat project management when it comes to government contracts because they're always going to need it.
I imagine. I see that a lot, and I've seen like job listings and job openings. There's a lot of PMs and government contracts, and a lot of my friends that aren't in tech that have had military background, I'm like, it's so easy for y'all to just get in this field.
It is.
Literally when I was in class, in college, I was the only female, but I was so young at the time that it wasn't even cybersecurity. Like, it was computer information technology, and it was a concentration at the time. But like, everybody in my class had military background, and just like seeing it evolve now, it's insane. It's like you, I think you, Herlane, honestly, you got in at the best time, and I think you also got in like the best route. And everyone has their own opinions, but I think that, I think people don't realize how close the military is to cybersecurity fundamentals.
Absolutely. Because a lot of the policies that are made come from the government and they're implemented through the military. And then you also have agencies like NSA, FBI, CISA that do a lot of the incident response and support when it comes to these cyber incidents. Cybersecurity at the end of the day is more a national security issue than anything. So, like all these private organizations and companies that might be getting targeted and hacked are nothing compared to like the critical infrastructure that we have in the US. So that's the one that matters more when it comes to trying to defend it. That's really what they prepare you for in the military. And so I urge any veteran or someone who has a clearance, if you have a clearance and like you could have been a cook, you have the easiest transition ever. And they don't realize that. I'm like, it's so easy for you to just go transition into a service desk role and work your way up as long as you have that clearance. And then there's a lot of different programs for military veterans too that they can do if they want to get into tech. They have a lot of resources available to them also.
Yeah, I think I've had one other person on my podcast. She was also a mil in the military. I don't remember if she, I think she was in the army as well, but when I heard you say skill bridge, she said that too. And I was like, what is that? And then she told me all about that.
It's
So
kind of like the
neat.
military's version of an internship.
Yeah, that's basically it. That's
Yeah.
so cool. I mean, there's so many resources out there, especially like all the tools that you have. And then, and you're in DC, I think there's even more like around you, I assume, because like when I saw it, I was like, and then there's always conferences and stuff. Okay, but we'll kind of get back to your experience within after the Air Force at Department of Homeland, and then we'll get into the Pentagon.
Yeah, so the Department of Homeland Security, I was actually working with CISA, the Cybersecurity Information Infrastructure Security Agency. I was working with CISA as a level four network forensics analyst. So I was part of their HURT team, which is the HUNT Incident Response Team. That's divided into, you have like the host forensics, network forensics, cloud forensics. We have some CDI, which are like engineer personnel, security engineers. And then the AP, which is adversary pursuit, they kind of do threat hunting and threat intelligence.
So when you were at Homeland, you were doing the incident response there. You were on the team with the IT team. That's crazy. I've recently met with a few government companies at my job, and I'm a cybersecurity PM, and I speak to them a lot, and they're so funny. They're so busy, but it's crazy because I came from incident response, and I've always done this. I was a sales engineer for incident response and managed detection response. And
Oh,
yeah, so I've seen a lot of trends. I've like seen all the tools that they use. So that's really interesting. How was your time there?
so one, very fast-paced. So we go on
Yeah.
engagements. An engagement is where someone might be hacked or they have a breach, and then they reach out to CISA for support with it. So we'll either do
And are
one
these
that's
like usually companies that reach out?
companies, anything to do with critical infrastructure. So it's open to every single agency or a company that needs support. So we'll go out there and help them with whatever they need help with. When it comes to incident response or network device integrity and threat hunting also.
Yeah, that's
So
business.
it was very fast-paced.
Very,
They're
very
still fairly
fast.
new. You know, they're newer.
Yeah.
They're building out the team. So
Oh.
there, it was like a couple of us that would go on the engagements, and it was all back to back. One of the coolest ones that I got to go to was to Guam, where they had a really big incident out there. It was a breach on a telecom company. So we're going to talk about that a little bit at Techsgiving too, because the cyber workshop that I'm giving is going to go a little bit into detail how that works when it comes to living off the land attacks.
Man, I wish I could go. I know I saw Thanksgiving was December like
It's
6th.
the 6th to the 8th. Yes. So the 7th and
Yeah.
the 8th are the two main days. It's a Thursday and a Friday.
I will be in Europe for work. So I was like, oh, there's like every conference that goes on, I just miss, but it's
It's
okay.
okay. Run it back next year, you know?
Yeah, exactly. Well, I hope some of our listeners get the chance to go see you and learn more about that
Thanks.
and really attend the workshop and get some hair products. I think I'm jealous.
Yes.
That's so cool.
Thank you. I have to create, you know, my creative juices flowing some way outside of work.
I know. Everyone says that, and I was like, this is my way, like the podcast, and then I work
Yes.
out. It's like that's like my two passions. It's just working out and doing a podcast. Yeah.
Those are good ones to have, honestly.
Yeah. So, okay. And then you were at the Pentagon for 2 years. So I just want to pause here, Helene. When you're transitioning to different roles, just for our listeners to also learn, how are you landing these experiences? And if you could give advice to say, does it matter how long you're somewhere? When did you know that it was time for you to start your next journey with another company or location?
Well, a couple of different things. So I go about it different ways depending on like what stage you're at in your career. When you're starting off, like I know a lot of people recommend job hopping, which is good, but to an extent. So if you're focusing on money up front in the beginning, when you should be focusing on building the skills that'll bring you money long term, I don't think that's always the best way to go about it, because that is something that hiring managers unfortunately look at. And I've seen people get disqualified because of it. And you might not realize it, but you know, they're paying attention to the fact that you're not going to stay there long enough because they don't want to use their resources, train you just for you to leave and go somewhere else. But it can be beneficial. I like to stay like at least 2 years. If you can stay within a role for like 2 years minimum, I think that's enough time to learn what you need to learn and then also contribute to projects and actually have value that you can show on your resume from what you did within that role. That's a lot of what one of the main issues is people don't really know how to translate the value of what they did is because they weren't there long enough. So you didn't really do anything of value because you were just you there, you went to work and then you left. So focus on value add things that you can add to your resume from those jobs. And once you feel like you have that, or if you ever start to feel stagnant, you feel like you're not growing, you're not learning because you learned everything there is to learn, see if they can give you an internal move that you can make to a different team or cross collaborate with a different team to learn their functions. That's another good way to go about it. Later on towards the end of your career, I think is when it's a little bit more lenient, especially also in government contracting. So some contracts might only be for a year. And then when that's up, you can go to a different one. So job hopping in the government contracting realm is completely different. It's not viewed as job hopping. They're just going to say, oh, what happened with this contract? That's it. It ended. And then that's the end of conversation. It's not something negative. For us, it's more accepted versus the private side when it comes to that. I would say if you're towards the end of your career, when you're trying to decide what your exit strategy is, I guess you could say, not necessarily exit strategy, but when you want know what you want to do for the next 20 years, you've already been in for like a decade. You're like, all right, do I want to go into a management route? Do I want to have my own consulting firm or whatever it is? Do I want to stay in an individual contributor or technical role? That's when you can decide what's the best career move for you to make. So that is one of the reasons also at the Pentagon that I decided to was because I could start SciTech there. I wanted a role that I didn't have to do W-2 anymore. I was W-2 also with CISA. So they were able to offer me the 1099 to come in and then do the corp-to-corp, which was contract under my company. So I can work for myself and work there, which that was very beneficial to what I was trying to do in the future. So it just made more sense in that aspect. I'm also trying to get the 8A certification. So with the 8A certification is for disadvantaged, economically disadvantaged small businesses, helps you get certain set asides for government contracts. With trying to get that, you can't work a W-2 job. So that's a decision I had to eventually make. I loved CISA and I think it was probably one of the funnest jobs that I've had. And also one that I got to really grow and kind of implement whatever I want because they really support you and they give you whatever you need to do whatever you need to do on the engagement. So I liked it from that aspect, but when it came to trying to move in towards government contracting, it was the best route for me to go.
Okay, so you said you had the Pentagon position with SciTech.
Yes, yep, I worked there under SciTech.
Okay, so you started off there. I see, you started SciTech before the Pentagon.
I was in the works of it, but I didn't get everything set up that I needed on the business side of it. So I was working originally under, are you familiar with Apex Systems? They're also kind of like a staffing agency. So I was working with them and then I was able to get out of the contract with them to move into working under myself on SciTech.
That's a smart way. I think, you know, you giving the advice for people to, I guess your exit strategy, know when it's time to kind of, I guess, level up, think about something, what's next. What made you stop full-time working and just go to starting your own thing?
So it still is more than full-time work, honestly.
Well, I guess like you're not working for, I mean, you're still working for other people, technically.
Yes, yes. Yeah, I'm still doing, so I still work with them and do countermeasures, and then I'll do other different contracts, subcontracts that we have, but it just made sense within my career, so I'm going to be able to get certifications that I qualify for that'll get me government set aside, so I'll get like the woman-owned business certification, minority business certification, service disabled veteran. I'm working on getting my VA and then get the service disabled veteran certification, and also just veteran in general. So being able to have economically disadvantaged, woman-owned, veteran, all of the different contract set-asides that I qualify for, it just made the most sense. I've watched and I've seen a lot of different companies that I look up to that were started also by like women veterans that I've seen how they kind of operate. And I'm like, that's what I want to do.
Wow, that's true. Yeah, that's smart. So when you're saying you get these certifications, because sorry, I'm still new to like learning about all this. So when you get the certified as a business, what advantage does that have for you?
So the government has set aside contracts. So, like, say they have a $4 billion cybersecurity contract, they might say, hey, we have $400 million set aside for these organizations, like, not organizations, these different qualifiers, whether you're veterans, whether you're woman-owned. So it's easy to be able to bid on them and be awarded because they have to give it to one of the people who qualify within them. The more that you qualify for, also, the better your chances are of getting awarded for it.
Right. Okay, so it's like their requirement. It's like their pool of what they have to hire for.
Yes. So it's kind of similar to how companies have to have a certain amount of minority and a certain amount of women at the
Yeah.
agency. It's the same with the government. So they have those set asides with the contracts. Those they can't just say, hey, we're giving this entire $4 billion to Microsoft and AWS. Like,
Yeah,
they
right.
have to support small businesses also, which they're really great about that too.
Cool, that makes sense. Well, that's really smart, and I think that that's just something for others as well, if they're looking at starting their own thing or even, you know, growing outside of what they're doing today in their 9 to 5. I think having your own business and growing that residual income is really smart. Are you the only one at SciTech right now?
No, so we have Kayshawn Soyini. I work with him at CISA. I also work with him at the Pentagon. He's one of my close friends that, within the industry. So he is actually our president. And then there's David Ibuye. So he does like the chief operator. He's a chief director. So he does director and marketing. And then we have Caitlin Lauren. So she also does our training and development programs because that's another portion we're trying to build out is to do cybersecurity training that we can give to individuals and then also sell to the government. And then I have a couple of interns too that work with us.
How fun. Oh, that's so cool. How do you manage your time? Like, how do you manage everything and keeping SciTech together?
A really good calendar. A good calendar, that's just, I try to have it. It's been hard to manage, but I think I'm kind of now getting the swing of it. It's just with all the conferences and things coming up that we have to prep for. I'm learning to delegate. I'm not great at that because I'm used to trying to do everything myself, but I'm
Yeah.
learning you don't always have time for that. So learning to delegate, and I'll be like, hey, these are the tasks I need from you guys. And then learning to trust also is another thing that I'm starting to do because I'm a Virgo, so I'm very particular how I like things. And so just learning to how to depend on the team, I think they've been great with that. And they've helped me to be able to manage my time a lot better too.
Yeah, that's sweet. I think you can learn as you go. You know, I think there's a lot of learning everyone can do, a lot of improvement. Was it hard starting out to find people to be a part of SciTech, or was it really a joint thing to where you saw this vision and then you brought in your own network? Because it sounds like you knew them, well, some of them.
It's a little bit hard starting out, but not necessarily on the aspect of like people to bring in, because there's a lot of people who want to be involved. They see the vision and they're also wanting to move towards that track, but they might not have what's needed as far as the set asides, what they like the certifications that they can get for themselves because they weren't military or they weren't a woman or minority. So they a lot of government contracts and small businesses typically work together. So they have like you can do mentor protege. So if they have their own company, we can bid on a contract together.
Oh.
So that's it's a lot of collaboration within government contracting in
Oh, I
general.
love
It
that. Yeah,
together.
that's good. That's cool. For somebody who's interested in having a service by SciTech or even looking at to be hired, is that something that is open?
Yes, it is open. We're always looking for people we need, like especially cybersecurity consultants, because there's a lot of work. So sometimes if we're able to contract that out to them, people who are willing to do 1099, we're getting our business development set up so that I can eventually bring on everybody as W-2, but that is still in the progress. So you can reach out to us through our website. You can also send an email. Anybody who's coming to Techsgiving also will be in person. So you can come and speak to us in person. And then we have a contact form that we're going to fill out at the actual conference, so we can do that as well.
I love that. Well, for our listeners, keep up with Herlaine. She can be reached. I'll put everything in the bio, in the description, her links and the website for SciTech as well. I think there's a lot of takeaways from this episode, and I think that's one, you have an amazing background and experience, but
Yep.
also the drive of the dedication that you've really built to be where you are today. And I think a lot of the women that come on here, I'm like, it's like big sister talk. I think me being just me, it's just me and my brother and my family. And like, I've always wanted a bigger sister. So like, this is where the podcast
That's so
comes in.
beautiful.
Yeah. And I hear like everyone give advice and everything. And sometimes I even find myself needing to hear a lot of these words. So, Carlene, it was so amazing to have you on. Before we end this, do you have any last words of advice? And if you can answer that one, or you can answer the one that I always ask, is what would you tell your younger self?
Those are both good ones. On yourself, I would say definitely not to worry because everything's just gonna fall into place. Like there's different times where you're going through a transition, you don't really know what's gonna come next, or might have fear of doing something like taking the push of moving out of Houston, going to New Mexico, and like starting over from scratch and not really knowing where to go. It was hard, especially if you have to figure out everything on your own and you don't really have a lot of guidance. So I'm just saying, stick with the course, you're gonna do amazing. And then for the advice that I would give to anybody who was anybody who wants to get into tech or cybersecurity would be number one is get a mentor or get somebody that can help give you guidance. It can be really difficult because a lot of things we have to self-teach, but if you don't have your own little curriculum that you can teach yourself, you don't really know where to start. So get some guidance and find someone that can be your mentor. And then also find a security path or career path that you want to go into and then kind of reverse engineer your way from there because it's a lot easier. So it's like if you want to be a CISO in life and you know you're dead set on just becoming a CISO someday, look at all the other CISOs and see what certifications they have, see what education they did, see what type of roles they did. Then you'll see, okay, a lot of them were in GRC positions. So it's like maybe this is the route that I should go now, starting out in my career, start with information assurance and then work my way up to that to CISO. Whereas if I want to be a security engineer, I can start in a SOC, or if I want to start my own company, I can see what I need to do as far as that. But never need to reinvent the wheel. There's a lot of paths that people take, and nobody has the same path, but there are some that are tried and true. And if you go on it, it's going to be pretty linear in what you can do with it.
That's amazing. That's good advice. I think everyone can take that away, and it's also applying to your life. I think,
Yes.
a lot of the things that you said, I think can go both hands. It can go professional, it can go personal. So, Herlaine, thank you so much.
So thank you for having me. This was amazing. And I love
Yeah.
the community that you've built. And I also want to applaud you for what you're doing. I think
Oh,
that's
thank you.
amazing. I love your podcast. So thank you for having me.
Oh, okay, everyone, thank you for tuning in.